Welcome to Medicast. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Today's topic is the untopic, actually. It's our fireside chats with Bob and Josh as we tell stories.
I like the untopic.
The untopic?
It's like an unconference, right? It's like open space or something. You figure out what you're going to
do. Open cast.
So it's an open cast, an open Medicast, an open kimono. What a visualization that is.
That's a good point.
Exactly. So Josh and I were sort of debating like what to talk about, and we didn't have a real good, we've exchanged some ideas, but we thought we'd just tell some stories about what's working and what's not, maybe. We're not even slamming, so we don't want to flame. The what's not is not a flame. It's just what's happening in our lives lately on the agile ground in our lives. So, Josh?
Shall I start?
Can you?
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah, so I think the key topic right now for me and my agile lean Kanban world is oscillation. We were agile for quite a long time, had some concern about the process, and the team was concerned about some of the issues specifically around the two-week sprints and trying to package everything nice and neatly into a two-week package and all the extra work and churn went around. Well, we have our planning. We have like 4 or 5 days left. Now we have to take a story that's next and break it down even more and spend all this time doing this, or we're over by a few days. So how are we going to slice and dice it so it works and it fits nice and neat? So they actually asked if they could bring in some of the Kanban theories of more of a pull method and planning as needed, just to try and save some of that extra time and effort in trying to make things fit nice and neat in this perfect little package. And I personally was excited because for the first time in a long time, the team really said, you know what, Josh, we want to fix this process. And that was a key milestone for us. So I was like, whatever you want to do, I don't care. It's yours. Take it and run with
there
it.
There you go. Exactly right. Let them go.
Yeah. So we went through a release, just pushed one out, mid August. And the first thing the team says is we don't like Kanban. You know, we want to go back to the old way. So trying to put the brakes on and trying to get us to narrow down on the right process for us. And is it a marriage of the two that works for us? Or is there something that we went a little too far with Kanban and we can peel it back some and get back to that happy place?
What didn't they like about it? If there was a top, like, one or two things?
It felt a little loosey-goosey, especially from the product owner. So the product owners were quite concerned, and actually a little bit of rumbling from the more vocal teams, or from the more vocal teammates, of, I'm not really sure where we're going, I don't feel like we know when things are done, we don't have that same aggressive drive of a sprint's ending, and we got to get this wrapped up now. So people felt like they were less urgent in a good way. Mm-hmm. So people thought that Agile and the sprints brought that drive to get something wrapped up in a specific time. And they thought that that was a good thing. And then the product owners were struggling to realize, are we ahead? Are we behind? And we kept the sprint theory for our release burn down. So every 2 weeks we had our demo, we had our retrospectives, we did all that. But planning was more open. So release burn downs were kept up to date and we tracked just the way we normally did, but at a team level it was hard for them to gauge how well they were doing. So there's some things that we're looking at trying to do that hopefully will fix that.
I mean, I would try to stay, so we're thinking about Kanban as well. We're moving in that direction. We have several teams that are Kanbanning, but I don't know how well they're doing it. Right. They've set up Kanban boards. They're certainly doing this stream of approach, like a stream of work.
Right.
And there's different swim lanes. So we have different categories of work. So our teams, the ones that are really sort of enjoying Kanban or seeing value in it, are the teams that have like high interrupt work, like the support teams. They have high interrupt work, so they have a high interrupt lane where they'll take an interrupt and they'll drive it through, but that'll defer other work. Then they have the feature lane. So they have a feature lane, they have a sort of a plan lane.
So these are like rows, you're saying?
These are rows.
Okay.
So the Kanban, in their case, it's they've actually compartmentalized like the types of work.
Okay.
And there's two or three different types of work. There's like major feature work, minor feature work. Oh, another thing is work they're doing. So like their own personal backlog.
Okay.
Like one of our groups is trying to do refactoring. So call it my own refactoring lane. then there's a feature lane or a dependency lane. Like if another team has a dependency to this team, it would go into the feature lane. And then it's a system, support group, so they get, you know, this server's broken, you have to fix it. So that's the passing lane, and they manage things. And then every one of those lanes has a vertical, a vertical analysis. Right. So you know whatever the steps are, and they're sort of swearing. I don't know how if we're classically that good about it. We're still learning. But. I'd say try to push it and maybe, you know, say, I mean, Kanban's incredibly flexible.
Right.
The team decides the board, right? The work is driven from the team.
Right.
So it's one of those things, it's more malleable than Scrum. It's much more malleable than Scrum. And so you're not dictating the process at all.
That's an interesting concept of the rows, because we have this drag, right? So does drag have a row where we can see that and track it a little bit better? Because we've never been really good at tracking drag. We've hacked away at it, but no real visualization at a team level.
But see, drag in this case would be things, it wouldn't be that you're tracking drag, it would be that you're not delivering work because of drag.
Right.
So you would see bottlenecks, you would see stories cluster,
right?
In whatever area they're going to... I mean, you'd see it. You'd track it from the point of view of it's a visual, it's a bottleneck, so you can't ignore it, right? And the team...
So drag for us, we have labeled it as non-planned feature work. So when a customer issue explodes out in the field, our sustaining team can't handle it.
So then you would have a swim lane. So in this case,
yeah,
you would have a horizontal for that.
Yeah.
And... classic Kanban, again, I'm learning, so take this, and I have a class next week I'm going to with David Anderson I'm really excited about.
My cousin.
Yes, with a British accent. So
all Andersons all of it, are related.
All Andersons are related.
That's just the way it is.
There was a singular Anderson in the UK.
Yes.
Now you took me totally. Thank you, Josh. I really appreciate that. You did. You took me totally. I forgot where I was going.
All right. So you have this class with David Anderson. You're still learning.
No. But it's those horizontals. Oh, you have SLAs associated with it. So in some cases, you have like you're setting an expectation. So the high speed lane is we will drop everything to service those. So part of Kanban is setting up your terms of service.
Mm-hmm.
Like how you're going to service the thing. So how are you going to? What is your prioritization to features versus your prioritization to those high speed things?
Okay,
it might be interesting.
Yeah,
you may be winging it too much.
Yeah,
and I mean that with respect.
No,
But you may be winging it too much in Kanban, and you may want to go back, read a book, and sort of go to classic Kanban, and then push on the team a little more.
Yeah.
And see if they don't.
Yeah, and the other thing with the horizontal, trying to understand that, is we also have a technical debt type work where about 20% of the sprint is spent on bug backlog, so just features that have been out there.
What we've been doing is, so that's that other lane. So we actually categorize it, so it sounds like there's more alignment with what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's we identify that technical debt work separately so that we're managing it. Like the 50%, you actually say as one of your SLAs that I'm going to get 50% of my technical debt work done.
Right.
And then you expect the team to flow that through.
Right.
Right. And then the high priority swim lane is it doesn't matter on the percentage, right?
Right.
I have to, if five come in, I have to handle five.
Right.
Whatever that is, so they're emergencies. So we handle those emergencies and flow those through. And then you start, and then there's the normal work. And you start, and now you get your board set up that way, and then you hit the start button. And now the team is observing. So the team's responsibility is what's their goal is maximum throughput.
So delivery, how is that team working with delivery? Do they have relatively frequent rollouts that when we're ready, we cut it, we go? Or?
So we still have this notion of two-week sprints,
right. So
which overlays, which sort of disrupts our Kanbaners or Kanbaners, right, in that it's a little artificial, but we still have the notion of two-week sprints. So they still try to align with a two-week or a three-week sprint or whatever, a release. They're still aligning with our tempo.
Okay.
So they're not flow-less. Like, for example, they would still demonstrate in a sprint.
But in theory, as long as their throughput continues,
correct. That's
what you plan on.
But the thing for them to switch is to get this, you want to switch the bit in the team to not look at, That's why it worries me when you said they like the hysericalness at the end. Well, that's...
Well, not the hysericalness.
No, but you know, I'm not picking on your team.
Oh, you are. That's all right.
Am I picking on the...
No, it's all right.
But it's that feeling of urgency, right? Yeah. But you don't... That urgency is also a bad smell from the perspective that you're rushing.
Right.
Right? And you may not be paying attention to the details, or you may not be testing thoroughly or something. So you don't, you want flow.
Right.
So you want sort of this, I want to maximize my flow, and I don't want this crazy, you know, I don't want people going crazy on one day or 2 days of the sprint or something like that.
Well, so it's not craziness, right? But people like that there's a target, and people felt like they didn't have a real target that they could aim for. So it wasn't this insanity in the last couple of days, we worked the weekend or anything like that, but it was, we didn't have a real... measuring stick.
So flow.
Right.
So I think the transference is cumulative. There's something called a cumulative flow diagram.
Yeah, which JIRA has built
which in. Which JIRA has built into yeah. it, we've discovered, right? Yeah. So what you want to do is be monitoring your cumulative flow and then concentrating on flow. Now, that's a weird target.
Yeah.
But it's not, right? It's
right.
It's how much stuff you could do a weekly. How much stuff are we flowing out of us per week?
Right.
And challenge the team with that. How many points? I think you still measure points on the work.
Right.
So you could maybe put flow up there as a weekly event that they...
But it's tough because work, specifically in my world, because my team, they're all new development. So we are... Our whole job in life is to crank out features. So work... is one thing, and features is another thing. Because we had teams back when we started with the burn downs that in JIRA would show the hour burn down. I'm like, I don't doubt that you're working hard. I don't doubt that you're putting in the time. But what matters is we're getting what was set in front of us done.
Right.
You know, so that's how I've been struggling to figure out how the cumulative flow diagram tells me more than I was getting from the hour burn down in Scrum. What I need to know is that point side of are we maintaining the velocity while flow is still good? I guess it's the two in parallel. I'd have to try and figure out the right way to measure.
But the thing, I mean, it's not just you two. It's a team. It's observing. So cumulative flow is on the tasks. So it's on the verticals.
Right.
So you're measuring the activity on the verticals. Like I'm in analysis phase. I'm in coding phase. I'm in debugging phase. I'm in testing phase, I'm in deployment. And then what the waiting, so you have these hoppers, like three stories are what? Done coding, waiting for tests. So they're in a queue waiting for test.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those bottlenecks that you want to examine. So the QFD on a daily basis, instead of, you know how if you have a burn down, whether it was hours or whatever, you look at it, you had no insight into the work that was being done. All you had, meaning, what was someone typing? Was someone coding? Was someone analyzing? Right. Were they writing a use case? What was the team? The team really didn't have like a global television screen that said this is what we're doing day by day on activities, right? We had like progress burn down.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying it's bad, but that's Scrum.
Yeah.
Whereas the QFD is giving you insights into. You know what? Those two developers should stop working on that story and test.
Right.
Because in order to maximize our throughput, we have these two stories that are what? In stasis, in testing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that activity sort of thing. It's the throughput that you care about. And maybe coach them. And it's not even you care about it. It's the team should be observing that.
Right.
And just auto-behaving. Like you would expect a team to say, if they see a cluster of stories in that queue,
right.
You shouldn't have to say a word. They should automatically... understand that, and again, they don't have to get them in Scrum. You would work to get it to done. All you work for in Kanban is to get it what out of that queue,
right?
And so it's just get it flowing,
right?
Right. You don't have to grab it to the end. You just have to monitor the board and get things flowing,
right? Okay.
It's a weird mindset that I'm still learning about. We are Kanban. I think we're doing it very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Back to one point you made, our POs hate it.
Yeah.
Or functional managers. So I'm sure a part of you probably hates it because it almost seems like this license to just, I'll let you know when I know, right? It's this huge license to just work.
Right.
And from a planning point of view.
Right, and that's where I was going, was it lifts the cover on efficiency of the team, but it obfuscates... Absolutely. The end product.
Oh my God, did that hurt on the way out?
No, it did not.
It did not.
Nice try.
That's the word.
That was the 25-cent word of the day.
Obfuscate.
Obfuscate.
Obfuscating. Obfuscated. Yes. It does. Yeah. That's sort of the rub. And our POs, in fact, I was talking to our director of product management about Scrum, and for any of our teams that are doing, we have some teams that are service related, and it works great there,
right? Yeah,
because it's, you're not planning so much, right? Yep. Right? But if it's feature related, in general, people really hate it. Now, the flip side, and this is the cool part, I hope it's the cool part, because as we roll it out, it's the product owner's job to sort of look in the lens. One of their jobs is to look through the lens down into the team of flow. And to try to start what? Forecasting. It is sort of their job to figure out, how can I forecast?
Yeah. We would struggle with that right now, because right now we are deflecting too much to our product owners. We aren't partnering with them like
really?
We should. So another layer is not going to be received well. I understand, but we aren't there yet. We aren't good enough at working with the product owners in our backlog. There's too many times where you'll hear someone say, well, PO will decide that, or we'll let them figure that out.
Yeah, so you have a problem there with Kanban, because it's... But what I'm saying, I think it's healthy. They feed... So if you have a peanut machine or something that's peeling peanuts, right, how you feed it is sort of... Like the stories, you're only feeding it a few stories. The size of those stories sort of a predict... You have control in the inbound queue. And then if you look inside the hopper at the processes that are working, if you have insight into that, then it depends how you feed it is sort of what you get at the end,
right,
if it's a well-oiled machine.
Right.
So that's what I mean by, if the product owner actually has more control, it's hard for them to get this, but they have more control over the flow of the machine based on how they're moving things. Like, they can change the cues.
Right.
So in my example back at work, if we want to do less... If you want more features, we have to do less. We could reduce the urgent queue, right?
Right.
So the fire queue could go from 5 whip to 2 whip.
Right.
But what does that say? We're only going to handle 2 emergencies at a time. That may or may not be good enough, and then we're going to handle more feature work. So the feature flow for that given team will increase.
Right.
The PO can start moving those levers with the team, not in a vacuum, but suggesting that they want to move those different levels of service from a business point of view, right?
Right. Interesting.
So anything else on that story?
So
on the fireside chat?
Actually, after further discussion, the plan is to, and I'm excited about this, to continue to refine the process, not...
Throw it away.
Not flop back to where we were. That's what I was worried, was we were going to have this knee-jerk reaction. Let's go back to Agile the way it was.
I hope not.
So we had pretty interesting and excitable discussions, and we landed back with, you know what, as we really talk about it, it really is better, and here's some things we're going to do to make it better. We're really challenged with external release cycles. So we are looking at having internal releases where we have, it's something we actually had to do with our last project on a separate team, where we had very specific demo days where we had designated, on this day we're going to demo these features and they all will be done, and then 1 month later this set of features, and then 1 month later this set of features. So it really pushed us to deliver as needed and have a very clear focus on what's most important, because the teams with a long release cycle vision would get cloudy on what really should I be focused on. So trying to reduce the scope of what they have to worry about while still maintaining this relatively major release life cycle.
So, and one of the reasons for us it's that we're thinking of Kanban, and you were alluding to it, it's a term that I'm thinking about. I don't know if I'm coining it, but like the tyranny of the time box. I don't know if you've talked about it before, but the time box has goodness, and it forces you to your team's feedback. It forces us, it's a milestone, it forces us to deliver. But then there's the tyranny of the time box, that what if I'm only, I'm a half day away, but I can't deliver it in the time box, but what do I do? The time box forces me to shelf that code maybe check it in, maybe take a week break
right.
while we replan the next sprint or something like that, and then resurrect that code again. Well, I could have finished it.
Right.
I might have been able to polish it on Saturday. I'm not trying to drive overtime, right. but I could have, if you'd allowed me to just work on
right.
it, I could have finished that feature.
Right.
But the tyranny of the time box prevented me, of the ceremony prevented me from doing that.
Yeah, and that was the key driver, was people felt like they just lost coding time trying to do that work to get things to fit in these 2 week chunks.
And
these
artificial 2 week yeah. chunks. And yeah. And again, Metacasters, I'm not saying the 2 week chunks are bad.
Right.
But there's a sort of, but we look at them as being like a panacea of goodness.
Right.
And it's not. There's ramp up. There's right. like when do you stop actually coding? Most of right. the teams, they don't stop coding at 5 p.m. on Friday
right.
of a 2 week sprint. They might watch. There might be a code. We have code freezes on Thursday.
Right.
So now, from a developer's point of view, they're what? Well, not, you know, I have a pre-code freeze or whatever. From a ceremony perspective, they might lose 2 days.
Right.
And they're not losing it, but they're yeah. not coding for right. two days. Then they have a ramp up on the next sprint.
Right.
Right. Where they could finish it. So that thing I'm really excited about, actually, that nature of Kanban, where you sort of flow it
right.
and allow the team to not, you know, as you hold doneness, as you hold quality,
mm-hmm.
Allow the team to finish things when they're finished.
Right.
The other thing there is, I think, when you crash into the end of the sprint, at least in our teams, quality suffers. Doesn't mm-hmm. drastically suffer, but I mean, we're doing over 50% of our check-ins on the last... Like the day before code freeze. Boy. Well, it's yeah. that hockey stick, yeah. right? It's that hockey stick burn down.
Yeah.
Well, you can't tell me you haven't seen that in your teams. Yeah. It's that hockey, right? It's part of that urgency yeah. at the end of the sprint. And you make mistakes.
Right.
Right. You're rushing and you're making mistakes. Whereas, you know, with flowless, I think it's better.
Right.
Maybe when I learn more, maybe I could come over and do a brown bag talk or something. Or we could do like having an outsider.
Yeah.
I know you're some of your guys, but maybe have a brown bag talk on Kanban
yeah.
might help or something like good. That. After I learn from the master Anderson,
yeah,
on
cousin that. Dave,
exactly. So I have a story for you that you can. I still have a product owner who doesn't get Agile real well, and I'm still getting these dates. We're still, you know, getting date questions. We're asking the wrong questions. So, meaning, you know, she'll come in, and it really is sort of our meta product owner, but it's, is everyone typing first thing Monday morning when a sprint starts? Are we typing code? Not about the quality of the planning or the quality of anything. We're getting questions like, we have a training session we're brought in, and it's like, oh, you can't train the team. You know, we're going to go to heck in a handbasket because you take 8 hours out. So 8 hours means we're going to get 8 hours less of features.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily, across 20, you know, let's do the math. There's 22 developers, 8 hours times 22. We've now just net lost, you know, whatever, 182 hours. Crap, we're not going to be able to deliver this thing.
Wow.
It's that traditional project management math and that traditional project management thinking. And we've been Agile for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, and I just... And this is me admitting that I'm not making coaching progress there.
Right.
I wonder, how would you approach, I mean, any ideas on how, ideas to approach that? I don't know if Kanban, I'm not sure it's going to solve that.
I don't think it's a process thing. It's not, I don't think it's understanding the process. I think it's understanding and the value of that and the return on investment. You know, maybe if you wrap it in classic PM terms of return on investment. Now it's tough because you probably get held to those things, right? As soon as you say, well, if we do this training, our propensity for writing buggy code is going to be reduced by X percent. The problem is if you lay that out there, I'm sure someone with that mindset will have a measure set up like from day zero after training, bugs better be down 27.4% or else, Bob, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
So it just... Education is really where I've tried to tackle things like that, and I have similar issues of where it's like there's a bit that just hasn't flipped yet, and
what's weird, at least in this person, is they, you know, they pretend to be Agile, and it's not malicious pretending,
right.
but it's like, I understand Agile, I'm adapting it, I'm leading it, but then the questions that they ask are almost underscore that the fact that they don't. They
right.
really are more traditional in their thinking. I'm not saying she's malicious at all, but it's like, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And it's really hard. I think maybe you're right. Education could help. Almost games. I've tried the slideware thing, right?
Yeah.
Where it's slide, or the case study thing. I'm wondering, so some Agile instructors, and I've never been fond of this, do all kinds of like the penny games, and there's lean games, and there's all these weird, you can do, what are those little plastic building blocks? You can do Legos. And you do them in teams, and you compete, and you have one team who's micromanaging, you know, and another team who's trying to lead, like, from a self-directed perspective.
Right.
Have you seen any success with those? I wonder if that would, if the light bulb would go off.
I have only seen those at Agile
conferences,
right?
Yeah.
I have never seen them put into practice in real life, making a difference like that, because that's really what you're looking for, is something that's going to come in and make
a difference. Well, the light bulb, right? I'm like, I can't, my slideware, so I can't, from a conversation perspective, get the light bulb to go off. I recommend reading, you recommend PowerPoints,
right.
I deliver training inside, so those things haven't gotten the light bulb off. I'm wondering if, like, actually playing, but you're right, I've never seen them sort of work in an industrial setting.
Right, yeah, it's always with a group that's already got that mindset or wants to get that mindset.
So they're already there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, with traditional thinkers, I mean, you're not going to get their attention very long for games.
Actually, the one thing that I saw where it happened, and this might actually work, and I don't know how you can make it happen, was we had a person that was in that same mode. And as a part of a project in the last release, they ended up, because of just need, in a role in a team. And, you know, it clicked. That moment hit.
Where they were in the team.
They were in the team.
Yeah.
And they were a part of it. And it was like, all of a sudden, I like went and I introduced myself. I'm like, hi, Agile Joe. I've never met you before. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Where in the world do you come from? I'm like, this is wonderful.
And they got it.
Yeah.
I think I'm afraid you're right in that it's that practical, and that doesn't surprise me. It's the practical, if you're living in it. It's weird. One of my managers the other day, it was funny. He was, so our POs ask these drill down questions sometimes, and they try to, it's a very traditional technique of, if I ask enough of the details, right? So they're not looking for the details to know more. They're looking for the details so they can convince you it's going to take less time.
Right.
So one of my managers, and our POs do that, and it starts with this behavior at the top of our meta PO. So one of my functional managers, we were having a discussion the other day, and he was doing that. He was drilling in, and I called him on it in the meeting, and he was like, "Oh my god!" And he's like, "Oh my god, look at what I've become!"
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So, actually, the point there is, it can even to the agilist, that bad behavior can what? It's an example.
Yeah.
That's permeating in. I think you have these two sorts of forces. You have good agile behavior, like you said, in the teams, and if you see it, it's going to infect you.
Right.
And then you have the other, and if you see it or part of it, it can infect you as well. And it's sort of your balancing between those two.
Yep, I've caught myself many times.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Like, oh no, what did I just say?
And you're an agilist.
I mean,
it's in your core.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, it's sort of in the environment. Brian, in this case, I mean, Brian is a great guy, but it was just funny.
Yeah.
And then his realization, he's like, you're right. I have become that which, I've become that which I abhor.
Yes.
Let's go, smack me, please. Smack me and wake me up. It's absolutely funny. I think it's just one of those hard things. I wasn't looking for a silver bullet.
Yeah.
But I think that, I mean, I think just product owners and really getting it.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be tough at that level to get them engaged in a team and really involved and have that light bulb flick, because that's the only thing that I've seen work.
Being on the inside.
Yep.
And I would love that, actually. I would love that. What gets it to me is me being on both sides. What generates my passion is my knowing that it's the right approach, not a perfect approach,
right?
Because I've tried the alternatives and they're ineffective,
right?
And I know by experience. But you can't assign those. It would be nice if you could assign executives to that stuff.
Right.
But you can't. Yeah. You can't assign an executive to a team. What else is happening in your?
Big thing for us is jumping to the cloud, and how we're going to do that, and infrastructure and all that. So that's become a real large part of my life within the past month or so. You know, we recently made a purchase of a company and application, and they're cloud-based, and we want to get cloud-based. And so when we want to get cloud-based with our customers, so when it's Walmart and casinos airlines and things like that, you're talking about scalability and elasticity and things like that.
That's
right.
Scary from us selling them on a cloud-based product.
Yeah, and then data.
Yeah.
You know, and protecting data and things like that. So
security becomes it becomes a real issue, right?
But,
or a concern.
Just being able to scale with customer need is a challenge, because that's not, we have been historically on-premise.
Right.
And so because we've been a part of Teradata, Teradata sold, it's this big, massive set of boxes that you pop in your data center, and we sit right next to it and play along really nice with it and take advantage of all that huge data. But now we're jumping in the cloud, so how do you scale data in the cloud? How do you transport data across the cloud? How do you run a data center, right? We are a data center company. Do we outsource it? Do we build it? What do we do?
Yep.
Things like that. You know, so that's
that's not just cloud. I mean, that's software as a service, which is what we what we do.
Which is what you do.
Yeah. I mean, and we talk about moving to clouds and things like that. There's different inhibitors. I mean, there's the performance inhibitor. In our case, we're an email marketer.
Mm-hmm.
So email support, like how do we route things, becomes, you know, what's internal to us from a performance, from an email, from a mail stack perspective versus what, from a user interface, what would be externally, you know, cloud-based. So how do we want to do that is something that we talk about as well. The technologies are sort of cool. Did the teams get involved in that? Do you have architects that are doing that?
Yep, digging into that right now.
Is it Scrum-like, or is it... I mean, do they do story cards for that, or how do you do the research?
Working on that. So that's one of those things where we're pulling people from all these different parts of our company, because our company and division, or whatever you want to call it, has exploded in the past 6 months. You know, and not just in numbers, but in locations and methodologies. Right. So we have the methodology.
I was going to ask you: are you having methodology wars to a small degree? Because you acquired a company that must have something that they...
Yeah, so we have small battles, you know. Everybody wants to do Agile, right? It sounds cool. It sounds like the way to go.
Doing Agile?
No. Working on that. So working on the education, on the tool set to enable that, on continuous integration.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, we're very heavily invested in that, and they aren't there yet. You know, we've been able to invest in those areas that really help us now, and they're playing a little bit of catch up just because they weren't there yet.
Isn't that weird though? I mean, I think of them as being I don't know much about them, but them being a smaller company, but here you have Teradata, sort of monolithic database, which has Agile teaching what I think of as a more entrepreneurial company about Agile. I think that's interesting.
I mean
it's a credit to Teradata, a credit to you guys doing it.
It's a challenge because everybody wants to do it, but it takes time, it takes effort. And doing that investment in the technical debt and the process debt to get that lined up and queued up and in place and mindsets changed and things like that is going to take a while.
It was funny, what made me late today, and you didn't say it, but Metacasters, I was supposed to be here, and I think I was 10 minutes or 11 minutes late.
17.
Was it 17?
17.
All right, so I wasn't counting as precisely as my esteemed colleague. So I was 17 minutes late for and it's in my own house, so Josh is just sort of tap dancing here, waiting with my wife.
And your dog.
Get here. So I was late, but the thing that we were talking about was we're trying to get a refactoring sprint.
Okay.
So what I couldn't tear myself away from is we want to do a team-wide refactoring sprint or a cleanup. Technical debt sprint at the end of the year, and people are whittling away at it. Believe it or not, right?
Yeah.
So we put it out there. I put out a proposal of 6 weeks,
right?
So 6 weeks over the holiday period,
mm-hmm.
but six firm working weeks, and then I was sort of saying, well, the holiday, you know, Christmas week is sort of a 50-50
right.
a wash. So, and we have two sprints, 2-3 week sprints. I was just sort of laying it out.
Right.
But what's interesting is product is what? Is nipping away.
Right,
chipping at the ends, right?
Yeah. So. Well, that's your job, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, quality.
No, you know what? You know what, though? I'm going to disagree with you. It is their job, but I've been there 2 years, and we haven't done anything like that.
Right.
And in 2 years, I mean, if you're a good... Another way of saying it is if I was a head of product, I would absolutely be a proponent of periodic refactoring events.
Right.
You know that? I don't know how many. I know there would be pressure. But I would say on a quarterly basis, I would probably fight for a week of time, at least a quarter,
right,
where teams could do what? Immerse and fight their technical debt.
Right.
I would be fighting for that as passionately because I get the trade-offs.
Right.
Even if I was bonus incented for business features, I really don't care. I would be fighting for product integrity as much as I would be fighting for what product features.
Well, and in theory, that investment will get you
new
productivity.
Exactly. And that is why I would be doing it.
Right.
It's not because I'm a pointy-headed developer. It's
right.
because I'm a pointy-headed business analyst.
Right.
And I get the business proposition. So it actually aggravates me. You can tell in my voice. It aggravates me that product folks, they don't get it. You're
right.
Absolutely right. It's sort of, they view it, there. It's my job to what? It's that traditional, it's my job, those pesky developers over what? They overestimate.
Right.
So I'm like a woodpecker. I peck at both sides of whatever estimates to get down to a lean thing. And I would be doing some of that as well if I was in that role.
Right.
But I would also be fighting for technical debt.
Right.
And it's a shame. That should be a test question for product owners. You know that? But when was the last time you fought personally?
Oh, that's good.
Where you championed a technical debt exercise.
Metacasters, that's your take home.
That's you, right.
If you're hiring a product owner, ask that question.
When was the last time that you, not did a development or manager or scrum master or the team complain and then you reacted, oh, they're complaining, they're complaining so much, I'm going to throw them a bone.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't count.
Right.
Right. When was the last time you went on, you established a risk position to clean something up because you felt that it was the right thing to do? And to Josh's point, the part B, it's not the part B of the question, but the part B of the premise is because in your heart, you know that it's going to have an advantage for you later on. You're going to get faster.
Right.
You're going to be nimbler. You're
right.
going to have higher quality code. It's going to be an advantage for your customer.
Yep.
What do you think the... I can't imagine...
It's got to be pretty low.
It's got to be...
Yeah.
It's got to be pretty low.
Yeah, so make sure you ask that as a leading question.
Absolutely.
You know, and just kind of see how they ramble on with it and understand, because that'll tell you the real answer, and you should be able to get to part B of that without having to ask it.
Right.
You know?
At all. Well, see, that's the premise of the question. When
right.
did you? It's did you initiate it?
Yeah.
Because in your heart, you know that it's an important part of the proposition. I can't even. Gosh, I don't even know if any of our. I can actually safely say, I think zero of our product owners have initiated.
I think
discussion.
One. I don't know that he has, but I believe he would.
Oh, so that's a different thing. We have some who would.
Right.
I think that we have a cadre of POs. They're all good in different degrees of how they get it. And even leadership of the person I was talking about is not bad. She's a great director. She's a great leader. But it's really hard to make that agile transformation.
Right.
Right? To truly make that agile transformation and hold and to stick to it. And in all fairness, they're getting beat about the head from above.
Right.
Right. In all fairness,
yeah.
Right. I get that there's tremendous pressure. What else? How are we doing on time, Josh?
We're doing pretty good. We're wrapping up here. You got any last-minute nuggets for the Metacasters?
Something that I'm inspired by is maybe you and I could work on, I don't know if it's a Metacast topic, but like a survey, a health survey for product owners.
Mm.
What do you think about that? Would you partner with me on that?
I would.
And maybe we could talk about some of the questions to a Metacast and then see if we can get some feedback back from
yep.
the Metacasters.
That'd be good.
So not just one question, but put together a small survey. Like a product owner maturity check.
Right.
I think that might be a really cool... What do you want to partner on that?
Absolutely. We could even do that at a conference.
We could do that as a conference. We could... I like that. I like that maturity check. Because, again, I don't think they're bad.
Right.
I think it would give them some insights into... This is where it gives them another lens. So what you said was in the team was one lens. Throw someone in a team...
Right.
And actually, we could do it from different perspectives. We could have the survey, you know, you could give it to the team and give it to the PO, and then identify what gaps.
Okay.
Like, what does the team think of you?
Right.
Right, versus what do you think of yourself?
Right.
And you could do a nice gap analysis or a spider chart of that or something. And again, for the good PO, it might give them an incentive to improve.
Yeah.
Right? It might spark their interest in, oh, I'm not as tuned into this stuff as I thought I was.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's, I was inspired by this Metacast. Maybe
that's good.
We do something like that a little bit.
Sounds good.
Metacasters, as always, from beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina.
Yes.
As early. This is a lunch. This is Josh and I changed schedule. So
school
this is,
started. So
school started. So this is a lunchtime thing.
Yeah.
But as always, we want to thank you for listening in. You can find, we're always looking for feedback.
Yes, we are. You can find us at metacast.com, meta-cast, the actual character hyphen. .com. And then on Twitter, we're at meta-cast, hyphen spelled out, because again, Twitter does not like non-alphanumeric characters. So reach out to us, email us, tweet us, direct message, you name it, we will respond.
Topically, you want to partner with us, whatever it is. I want to thank you all for listening. This is a privilege. Last time, I think we celebrated our, 20th or something?
Yeah.
So we're gaining traction.
Yes,
we're not going away.
No, we're not.
We are not going away. You can't get rid of us, so we're there.
Yeah.
So
I would like to thank Bob for being late today.
Thank you, Josh. I would like to thank Josh for being obnoxious today. So, but then again,
exactly,
every
day.
So this is Bob Gamlin.
This is Josh Anderson.
Till next time, shake
and bake.
Bake, yeah.